The Federal Reserve met yesterday in a two-day meeting looking closely at policies. The financial recovery is happening, but it's happening very, very slowly. And the Fed's policymaking committee predicted in June that without any changes in their behavior, unemployment would decrease by only a tiny margin in the second half of the year. If it decreases at all, it could stay static. The meetings are in part to decide how best to address the unemployment rate. And joining us now is Diane Swonk, the chief economist at Mesirow Financial, and according to Wall Street Journal, one of the top forecasters in the country. So you're going to give us the right information. You're going to tell us exactly what's going to happen at the Fed, right, Diane?
Give my best try.
Well, what they're considering here is something that was actually an idea put forward by Alan Greenspan, and it's this idea of insurance, i.e., although there's not a crisis right now, there is a chance that unemployment will not fall dramatically. And, of course, we have a looming problem in Europe, and therefore the Fed could consider some kind of insurance to cushion the blow. Could you explain?
Well, actually, it's always been this hedging the downside is what the Fed has been doing. So I guess an insurance in that way is that you want to act to try to hedge the downside risk of an additional weakness in the U.S. economy. And remember, it's both inflation and unemployment that they care about. And if we were to go into another recession, say, fall off the fiscal cliff in the United States or Europe, the debt crisis there were to spin out of control and go into a panic, which would likely precipitate another recession in the U.S., you'd also face disinflation or maybe even deflation as well. And these are things that the Fed is very concerned about right now is how much does it need to do now versus with limited ammunition, how much it needs to wait till it really sees the whites of the eyes of its target before it shoots.
Yeah, there's very little tools left in the toolbox. I mean, let's talk about quantitative easing because there was quite a bit of talk about that, although it sounds as though that probably won't happen. The second series of quantitative easing ended last summer. Do you think it's possible that even if they don't do it at this meeting, that come September they could institute QE3?
I actually do. And the best way, you know, one of the things people get oftentimes are very confused by quantitative easing just because of the name. It means they're going to expand their balance sheet and buy large-scale purchases of assets. And the only kind they can buy right now are mortgage-backed securities and treasuries. And I think it's really important to call it credit easing. That's what they call it more oftenly in Europe. And it has had a big effect on credit easing, particularly in the mortgage market. The idea would be to expand your balance sheet, particularly of mortgage-backed securities, so that banks would be more willing to lend. That's where the tightness is. It's hard, even if you qualify. We have the highest affordability in history. We have low interest rates, and people are finding it still difficult to close on an actual home. Well, it'd be much easier if the banks can actually sell those mortgages off their balance sheet and not carry that risk right now, because they're not really willing to carry a lot of risk, and mortgages still have a lot of questions around them because of all the scandals that happened during the peak of the boom and then thereafter as they went after fraudulent kinds of mortgage practices.
Although, I mean, the essential argument, we come back to this argument again of should it be the Fed that's addressing these things? Shouldn't it be a basic reform going on with tax policy and economic policy on Capitol Hill?
Well, fiscal policy is much more suited to deal with the economy that we're in, and particularly in the wake of a financial crisis. You think of it as you lost, after financial crisis, you lost a lot of credit in the economy, and you had this huge gap. And what the Fed has done is expanded its balance sheet to try to fill that gap, but it's very limited. Fiscal policy would be much more targeted, could be much more effective over a longer period of time. That would have been ideal that we had fiscal policy that lasted longer as a stimulus. But right now, we don't even have them talking about the fiscal cliff we could fall off of, let alone having a long-term deficit reduction that would have allowed us some more fiscal stimulus, something Ben Bernanke himself was begging Congress to do. That said, there is a law. The Fed has a dual mandate to both keep work towards full employment, lower the unemployment rate from where it's at, and keep inflation stable, and it's lower than what they'd like at the moment. Those two mandates force the Fed by law to act. Now, even within the Fed, of course, there's debate on that, but of course they don't have the best tools out there, and the tools they have are getting more and more blunted the further we get down the pike into this very subpar, uncertain growth environment. It's kind of the flip side of the 1980s. 1990s, where you had all caution thrown to the wind and we had very robust growth. Everyone figured the world would never change, and they bet on companies that didn't even have revenues at the time. Now we have the opposite occurring, where there's a hesitation to do anything, not take on credit or not even spend the cash that companies have on their balance sheet. Even consumers have pulled in a bit, not spending all that they're earning. And then we're seeing that caution feed through in a very uncertain, subpar growth environment, creating a more vicious cycle.
Well, and part of the caution here is that I think people may be afraid, officials at the Fed, at least some of them, that if they use one of the last remaining tools in the toolbox, there's a psychological damage there, that perhaps there's some comfort among the financial markets here in the U.S. that there is a tool left, right? We don't want to use up the last thing that's there.
Well, that certainly is a timing issue, and I think that's very important. It's also, you have to remember, what the Fed's trying to create in the way that they communicate policy as well, one of their tools is communication, is in the sea of uncertainty, can they create, push people, make it absolutely repulsive to hold cash, make more productive bets on our future so we have a future, and also give people some certainty that if they make those bets, they're going to get a return on those bets. That's part of this idea where they say, we're not going to raise interest rates until late 2014. They could move that back to late 2015. That is one tool they could use today. But we have to start thinking about what's the credibility of that promise now that the Fed is making, or it's actually a pledge conditional on the economic environment. If we get a new Fed chairman, Ben Bernanke likely will leave in the early part of 2014, and depending on who's president, there's people who could replace him who have been very critical of this kind of policy, not only the expansion of the Fed's balance sheet, but also the communication, so you wouldn't want to undo all of a sudden something that you've done. And so you start to get the Fed trying to offset some of those uncertainties, but then there's debate there as well for financial markets.
Well, we're going to get to find out what the decision the Fed has made at about 2 o'clock Eastern this afternoon. What are you hoping to hear from them, Dan?
I think we'll hear more on communications. We're not going to get QE3 yet. I think in September we will. And the Fed is just trying to do the best that it can with the tools that it's got left in an environment where Congress has abandoned them.
Diane Swonk, Chief Economist at Mesirow Financial. Thank you so much, Diane.
Thank you.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.